AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
O'Reilly. Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All right, boys, welcome back to a very special episode of Sigma Cinema. Neil, my fellow Midwestern dweller, how's it going?
I'm feeling a little bit optimistic. I got a call back from a place I'd interviewed with last week, and they're putting me onto their second round, which...
Nice.
You know, I'm hoping it's going to be a good thing, as long as I don't botch it. So, second interview this Monday, and... otherwise, feeling pretty good about that. And then taking a break here to record this while helping prep for the feast tomorrow.
Right.
Nice, dude.
Any curveballs they threw you in the first round interview?
No. Frankly, I think that my particular interviewer was helping me on some level. Maybe not like intentionally, but it was very relaxed and... I think she kind of helped me through a couple of moments where I was getting tongue-tied and not presenting myself that way.
Oh, that's good. You know, it's very helpful to have somebody on your side.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, that sounds good, man. Hopefully you get some more good news with that soon.
Do you know how many rounds total there's going to be?
From my understanding, this will kind of be the make-or-break one.
Okay, well, Godspeed, man. I'm sure it'll go fine. Have you guys seen Step Brothers? I always think of the interview scene from Step Brothers where they'd be like, hello, we'll be interviewing as a team.
I haven't seen it since like high school, so I really can't remember. Like, I need to rewatch it.
It's gotta be top three stupid comedies that really make me laugh.
Nice.
Okay, well, Neil, I'm glad things are going to be optimistic for you. I am really pushing for you to, I mean, obviously you already jumped the shark from your old job, but I'm pushing for you to get into something better, because I think you deserve a little better than where you were at. It's sort of like something Gideon and I have talked about before with him, maybe jumping careers at some point. So glad to hear that. How about you, Gid?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Finished the Fortnite Battle Pass with plenty of time to spare. So that's been fun. It's just been, you know, the Simpsons stuff. I don't know if you saw, but Kill Bill is going to be like a big part of the next season. And Quentin Tarantino was like at a Fortnite event. And I guess like that same day was like, they added their first like barefoot skin in the game, which is funny. But it's just, you know, it's just ridiculous, but I've been having fun with that. Just grinding away on the Tsushima side quest still. We got Stranger Things season 5 premiering tonight. It actually just premiered 10 minutes ago. So that's what I'm going to do after this.
I'm taking up valuable time on, watching your show that's been, it's had 4 seasons in 15 years.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, I'm hopeful that it's just like as good as the last season was, because I really like that one. It sounds like they've poured like insane amounts of money into it. So I think it'll be really fun. I'm hopeful for it.
Do you think you'll go to one of the in theater screenings of the final episode?
Hell no. After how many bad theater experiences I've had, I'm like, let me just enjoy this home.
Yeah, I don't think you understand. Our audience viewership drops every time that you don't have a bad theater experience. We need you to have more.
Yeah, I need to have more worse ones. It'll probably be, I don't know, it'll probably be like people screaming with Elle as she just like screams at the monster, and that's how the show ends, with her arms like outstretched, right? Something like that. But
dude, wouldn't it be cool if like a digitally restored Kurt Cobain came and literally like ended the 80s? Like that was how it turned out.
That'd be awesome. He comes through the upside down portal or something.
Yeah.
But other than that, watched a couple movies. Not too much. I watched the 1999 movie Election, which is like a comedy, and that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
And then I watched Burn After Reading, which I hadn't seen in...
Oh, the Coen Brothers, right?
Yep. Haven't seen in like 10 plus years, and that was a lot of fun as well. So
yeah. Where does that rank for you with Coen Brothers movies?
I really need to see more of their movies. I've seen a good amount, but I have plenty of like blind spots. But I really like that. That's a like really strong four. I just think it's just a really fun time. I think it's hilarious. I like how it's kind of like Big Lebowski, because it's just like this crazy, just like plot, and their characters are uncovering things, and then it's just all kind of just almost like one big joke. So I really enjoyed it. I like how they can do like something funny and silly like that, and then something super serious like the year before with No Country for Old Men. So yeah.
Yeah, they definitely have as wide of a range as almost any set of filmmakers I can really think of. I've heard him say in interviews they intentionally try to do something different every time, and it frustrates them when people say, like, oh, we knew it was a Coen Brothers movie. Like, it has a certain quirk and a certain charm to it.
Was good.
I'm good. So, yeah, exactly. Like, it was a good, smart, well-written movie. Well, good. I'm glad you got the Fortnite Battle Pass all riggedy wrapped up. Good. And then you're on the Ghost of Tsushima side quest.
Yeah.
Hell.
Yeah, I should be close to being done, and then I'm going all in on Death Stranding to get back to that, because I don't want to put it off.
The last thing I was doing for the Ghost of Tsushima Platinum, now that you mention it, was the side quest with that monk named Nario, Nario. And every time they say his name, it sounds like somebody's saying Mario, or like screaming for Mario in the background. That's all I remember, is that like that was like the last thing I ever did in that game.
The conclusion to the side quest is really fucked up and sad. It kind of like pulled the rug out from under me. I was like, damn, dude, this sucks. Like,
well, no, we're the only three internet-dwelling men that apparently don't like Ghost of Tsushima all that much, or we're all like sort of more mixed on it than I would say like the general internet.
I mean, I do still like it a lot, but it's gotten so like long in the tooth for me at this point, where I've played it once all the way through and did a lot of the side stuff, and now I'm doing New Game Plus and doing side stuff, and I still have the DLC to do. So I'm like over 100 hours into this game. I'm like 120 hours or something insane.
Yeah,
I feel like
this. It would have been a good game at like 30.
Yeah, or if I could have like wrapped it all up, because I think I got busy when I was first playing. I couldn't like finish it up, but it's like, yeah, if I could have knocked it all out at like 50 hours, I probably would have had a higher opinion on it. But it's similar to like Jedi Fallen Order. When I got the Platinum for that, I like never wanted to play that game ever again, because I was so angry with how the maps work in that game, and I was just like ready to never play it.
Is that like your best example of a game that you played like you made yourself sick on from playing it too much?
Yeah, probably best comparison. Because there's other ones, you know, I always talk about Mirror's Edge. I played that game through like 13 times or something,
right?
I still want to go and play it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I can relate to that. Like, I often go back to, I find myself going back to like flawed games more than I find myself going back to games that I loved, like 10 out of 10, because like I'm searching like for that 10 out of 10 experience in the flawed experience. I'm like, there, I almost feel like there's a part of it missing. Like I missed something. Like, I find myself going back to like Ghostwire Tokyo a lot, which is like a flawed experience for sure, but it's a world I so badly want to live in. And Neil, am I remembering correctly, you burned yourself really bad out on like Yakuza Zero?
No, I really enjoyed Yakuza Zero, and then getting through Yakuza One Remastered, or Yakuza Kiwami, that's what it's called.
Kiwami, right, okay.
And yeah, then I started two and just couldn't commit to it.
Yeah, okay, that's right. Yeah, Kiwami, if I remember, is that the one where like Majima is popping up and you're fighting Majima like over and over and over again, like all the time?
Constantly. And then the part of the issue is that like one of the progression chains requires you to fight Majima under certain circumstances, so like he would keep appearing to me in like a way that wasn't useful.
Right.
Oh, that would make me angry. Like it would feel like the fight is kind of a waste of time because it's not the right parameters, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like, you know, fight Majima when he's emerged from the sewer five times, and it's like he just came out of a trash can, so this fight doesn't count. I've already fought him out of a trash can 20 times.
Or yeah, like fight taxi driver Majima, or fight like strip cross dressing Majima. it gets a little it's a fun gimmick, but you know, I take a break between every major Yakuza game I play. You know, I play it a lot and I play it through, and then like I'm good for a while, which is a shame because they release like three of those games a year. So I'm just like never ever going to be caught up with Yakuza at this point. But I played like, not this year, but last year, I played like three of them. I played like 3, 4, and 5, like all right in a row during the summer. So yeah, never doing that. Never going to do that again. I think we were still in our old apartment in the city proper when I was doing that. So yeah, maybe this next year I'll get back to it. Well, guys, we are here to talk about a movie called Mom and Dad. And Gideon, you brought this movie to the podcast. So why don't you tell us kind of where you heard about it, what's your history with the movie, why you wanted to bring it, and then maybe give us like a brief synopsis at the end of that.
Yeah. So Alyssa had told me about this movie, just told me it was, you know, pretty batshit Nicolas Cage movie she saw with her mom and thought we might like it, just for how crazy Nicolas Cage can get in this. And so that's all I had really known about. I didn't watch any trailers or anything. And so I thought it'd maybe be a good pick too, especially kind of how you were like lamenting an Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, how like Nicolas Cage almost seemed like a little, maybe like watered down or more like broad appeal, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I figured that, you know, it's not that long. I think it's less than 90 minutes. Seemed kind of like a fun action horror kind of movie. And I liked the premise. That was the main thing. I liked, you know, it's like maybe some parent's dream or nightmare, depending on your perspective of wanting to kill your children.
Right. So you knew the premise going in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I just knew that's, you know, Alyssa gave me just like a short, you know, basically just, yeah, the parents are trying to kill their kids. That's like the whole thing.
Okay.
That was like pretty much all I knew. So just sounded interesting. And I was down to check it out and bring it to the pod just for that premise. Okay, let's see what they can do with that simple premise. Yeah.
So how would you go for a brief synopsis of this movie?
I
know that's kind of the big headline, right? Is that the parents, all the parents in the movie are trying to kill their kids.
Yeah, I mean, basically it is, you know, Nicolas Cage, his wife, he has like a teenage daughter and like a, I don't know, 10-year-old son.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
And there is some weird, almost like broadcast or like white noise static that I guess is making parents go insane and having, I think they explain it in one of the newscasts, like instead of that natural urge to want to protect your children, it's like it's being reversed and they're like driven to kill their children. And, you know, it has a crazy opening scene where this mom drives her car onto train tracks and leaves the baby in the car to get destroyed by the train. And then like 5 minutes later, you see Nicolas Cage doing like a joke about it with his son with some ketchup on the kitchen counter.
Oh, that grossed me out so much. I don't know if you guys know this, but I can't stand the smell of ketchup.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I just like, I think ketchup is gross. So like when there's like the smell of ketchup somewhere and you just know that like that counter is going to smell like ketchup for like a week.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah. God, I'm just like, I almost just gag thinking about it, honestly.
Do you like mustard? You a mustard guy?
I wouldn't say like I love it. I'm just like, ketchup on a hot dog is like the biggest sin in the world to me. Like I would much rather have like a small amount of mustard on a hot dog. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, what's on your dogs then? What do you like on them dogs?
Yeah, like relish, mustard, stagnant cart water, onion, you know, the ketchup on a hot, you know, tomato, pickle, celery, salt, maybe a hot pepper, you know.
The whole deal. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I like them dragged through the garden, Chicago style. Neil, what do you like on a hot dog? Tangent.
Mustard and onion. That's my go-to.
Mm. Okay. Excellent. And Gid, are you a ketchup connoisseur?
I do like ketchup, but I totally get what you mean, where especially if there's too much, it's almost like sickly sweet. So especially in that scene, like it's just like huge pile of ketchup. Like that would be, yeah, it would smell like that even after cleaning with chemicals and everything. So I get that. For me, yeah, I mean, it'd probably be not too much ketchup, but ketchup, mustard. I definitely like onions. I like a good chili dog, chili cheese dog. Relish for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Poppy seed.
And I just ate. Now I'm getting hungry again. Well, at least tomorrow's Thanksgiving, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fairly good synopsis. I mean, it's not like overly complicated from a plot standpoint. It's mostly just like, yeah, this crazy signal goes out and all of a sudden this like nice kind of suburban town is infected, where all the parents are like ravenous for like wanting to instinctually just kill their own children. And I was actually you know what, before we get to the thoughts and everything, Neil, did you know about this movie before this? Had you ever heard of this? Did you know about the premise going in?
I had absolutely no conception of this movie going in.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I was kind of in the same boat. I just read the back of the box where it said this, it's like Home Alone on bath salts. And that ended up being a fairly apt comparison. I thought the other movie that it sort of reminded me of was, do you guys remember Bird Box, that Sandra Bullock movie that was like virally popular on the interwebs?
I never saw it, but I remember it.
Yeah, never watched it. I just remember seeing
that poster. So similar thing where there's like a signal being sent over digital like screens and displays where like if you see it, you know, like bad shit is going to happen to you, or you're going to like kill yourself, or you're going to do some like jump out a window and do some crazy shit. It reminded me a lot of that. But I didn't know anything about this movie going into it. I guess since I'm already talking, I'll kind of give my 10,000 foot thoughts. At first, I was like, I kind of went through like a inverse bell curve with this movie, where it started off, and I was like really impressed with how like realistic a lot of it was, like the phone use and like the teenagers and the younger kid. And a lot of the stuff with the parents being like washed up and like being jealous of their children's youth, or like when Selma Blair goes into the graphic design studio and they're like, hey, you should take some classes, you can't just jump back into this, and she's like lame, or in Cage like trying to build a pool table in the basement and busting out his old band t-shirts, he's like wearing a Misfits shirt. You know, I thought that was all very like realistic and good. It's so effective, it takes a while for the action to really start in this movie. So if this movie is about 90 minutes long, I would say it's about the 30-minute mark where shit really starts popping off. It's all the kids there at school, and then like there's like police sirens, and then there's like kids going to the office, and people are like, what's going on? It actually, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but it reminded me a lot of episode one of Twin Peaks.
I have not seen it yet.
Have either of you guys seen? Okay, so like episode one of Twin Peaks, they find out that like Laura Palmer is dead. That's like their classmate in a small town, and like the word spreads slowly through the town about like what happened, and you see everybody's like reaction in real time as they start to learn about it. So that was exactly what this movie kind of put me in the mind of. So anyway, yeah, that first 30 minutes I thought was like really good. Maybe a little cheap, a little cheesy. And then I was a little bummed when the thing that was converting everybody to like want to kill their children was so nebulous. Like I know Neil is going to be so mad about my take on this because he already knows what I'm going to say. I wanted more of an explanation about what the hell's going on.
I'm
sorry, guys.
I'm quitting, Sam.
And to be clear, by the end of the movie, I didn't care anymore. I was just happy to be along for the ride. But when it was like a fuzzy computer screen that was making everybody wanted to kill their kids, I was like, ah, son of a bitch. I wish it was some like cool looking alien that was like trying to make people do this, and not just like, oh man, it's the TVs, man. You got to shut off the TV. You know, like it was so like sort of nebulous and like, I don't know, unexplainable. So I was a little bummed by that. But then once it got to be like the last third of the movie where it was like Home Alone on bath salts, then I was like really, really enjoying myself again. And I think Nick Cage gives a good performance. I think Selma Blair is not only very hot in this movie, but gives a good performance. And I love the punchline at the end where like it's mentioned very early in the movie that their grandparents are coming over, and you forget about it. And then like 5 minutes before the movie ends, it's like ding dong, and then suddenly the grandparents are there and they're like trying to kill Nick Cage and Selma Blair. I thought that was fucking hilarious. Like when surprise, Lance Henriksen comes to what, Neil?
Yeah, I was gonna say surprise Lance Henriksen.
Yeah. Well, I was like watching during the opening credits and it said Lance Henriksen, and I was like, Lance Henriksen's in this movie. And then I forgot about it, and then he showed up and sprayed Nick Cage in the face with like bear spray. So that was awesome. So I don't know. I had a really fun time. I wouldn't say it's like a particularly smart movie, but I think it was an entertaining one, and it was 90 minutes. So it's hard to be too upset. Neil, how about you? 10,000 foot thoughts.
This movie for me was a lot of peaks and valleys. I definitely remember getting to about 40 minutes in and then waving my mouse on the screen. I was like, oh God, there's still another 40 minutes left. I think similar to some other movies we've seen, like this is like, this would have made like a really great, like 50 minute short film. And unfortunately they just had to add in an extra 30, 40 minutes that just, I feel it does kind of drag at times. But I will say that the peaks that it has are very good. Like it, you know, it's kind of demented. But like, it's like a dark absurdist humor. So like parts of it are actually like funny. Mm-hmm. there's almost it's almost like a zombie movie in some ways. Like the parents are just like so intense killing their kids. It also reminded me of a Junji Ito manga.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
One in particular where, as I remember it, all of a sudden, there's a balloon of everybody in the world that looks like them that's just floating around chasing them, like you know, it moves like a balloon slowly in the wind. But if it catches you, you're like instantly strangled to death. And if you pop it, then you die. So you just have to like constantly just like be on the lookout for your single balloon in this world to stay alive. And so, it reminded me of that, like when the parents like break the zombie protocol and like are climbing over the fence to get into the school, and like there's like 280-pound dad just like tackles his like 14-year-old daughter on the football field to like stab her with his keys or something. It's like what? Like it's demented. I felt bad for laughing, but I did laugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's very fair. I would say you speaking to say it's like a little too long. It's like this would have been a really good BBC episode for like Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. You know, because BBC aren't BBC episodes like 50, 60, 70 minutes. They're like long, right? So yeah, that would have been like a really
solid hour out of this. I think it was just a little too long.
Okay. Yeah, I think I generally agree with that. Gideon, what's your 10,000 foot thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I knew going into this it was kind of like lower budget. So I was just kind of hoping like, okay, let's have some fun with this. I'm not expecting too much. I definitely agree with Neil where I feel like it drags in moments, and I feel like we almost spend too much time in like the opening 30 minutes. Like we don't need all this setup. I was like opposite of you, Sam, where I was like, I don't care about why they're trying to kill their kids. Like just, you know, it just whatever it is as an excuse to have this movie. So I can just get more of like Nicolas Cage being crazy and murderous towards his kids. And one thing I was kind of disappointed with the opening like 30-ish minutes is I kind of wanted to see and have more development with, like, you see Nick Cage is kind of like a piece of shit dad. You get these like vignettes where he's like talking to his kid while they're like having a popsicle about how he crashed that car while he was like with his girlfriend, and just like
being a pussy wagon.
He's like, yeah, swearing and talking about a pussy wagon, and his kid's like 9 or 10 years old. And you know, the housekeeper, she's like, oh, I made lunch for you, and he's like, fuck you, like under his breath. And it's like, I almost would have rather had like, can we follow him to work? Because we see him like watching porn at work and he fell asleep at his desk. And I kind of wish we could have seen him like being all jokey strange with like all the other people he works with, rather than like what was going on at the high school. I didn't really care. And I almost wish they would have gone a little further, like when that kid is like climbing over the fence and like the faculty is like trying to bring him back and the parents are trying to grab at him. I'm like, are they going to rip him in half right now? Because that'd be kind of awesome. But they didn't do that. So that was a bit of a bummer. But, you know, on the whole, it's like for what it is, I think it's a fun, I think what you would call it, Sam, like a film in 40s, just like get a couple brews, just like have some fun with your friends watching it. And I did enjoy like the action and the kind of craziness. I thought for as like eclectic and strange and energetic, the editing mixed with the interesting music choices, let's say, for the score and everything, it kind of worked for that kind of twitchy energy that they were going for, with just how, you know, somebody would say something like one of the kids would say something to Nicolas Cage and his head would like snap over to him and he'd have these like crazy eyes. So I think it was fun. It definitely has, you know, its flaws, but it's kind of a little bit more forgiving just for how, you know, I know it's not any huge production or anything, and I had fun with it on the whole.
So this is like more of a larger subject, but it certainly applies to this movie. And it's like a horror trend that I want to just bring up and comment on. I feel like this has been a thing ever since like Jordan Peele got more popular with Get Out. It cracks me up how mid your movie can be, your like horror movie can be, and how like absolutely no new ideas it has. And still, like, this movie ended, and like the first credit was like, who's what's the name of the director? Brian Taylor. It's like a Brian Taylor film. I'm like, dude, I don't give a fuck that Brian Taylor made this movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, every horror director thinks they're Jordan Peele or Alfred Hitchcock now, where it's like their name being on the movie is like super important. Or I feel like I see it in horror marketing a lot. It's like from the twisted, fucked up mind of Brian Taylor, and you're like, who the hell is Brian Taylor? Yeah. You guys know what I'm talking. Does this also know you guys? I don't. Maybe that's just a me thing.
Yeah, I think that. There's like a subset of creative people who think that their name is the draw when it isn't. Like the concept definitely exists, you know, otherwise, you know, Sam would have been like, what the fuck is Death Stranding?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, like, you know, it's almost like if you think that you have to put like your name on the, like bigger than the title of the movie, you're probably not actually the draw.
Yeah, there's only like a handful of directors who the general public would know by name, and certainly like I even understand it kind of in the case of like Mandy. I don't know anything else that guy has done, but his name is Panos Cosmatos. I mean, that's an awesome.
I mean, that's name. A fucking cool name, though. He's got that
yeah. going for him. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, well, if your name is Panos Cosmatos, so it's like, listen, I don't know you from Bill Smith, but you've got a sweet name. It's like, yeah, I put that on the front. Whereas like Brian Taylor, like this guy made I guess he made Crank. Is that good?
I remember watching one of them in high school. Definitely had that similar kind of like, almost like, let's call it crackhead energy to it.
Yeah.
But I was not crazy about it. I would maybe like it more now, but it was a very strange and graphic movie. Like it he was also made that. But yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say he also made the movie Gamer with Gerard Butler.
Oh god. Oh, nice.
Right?
These are all movies that like, again, it's like an interesting concept for about 40 minutes. And then, but we have to make it feature length somehow.
Mm-hmm. So I think an elephant in the room that nobody has brought up. This movie had one of the most, I wouldn't say horrifying, but like one of the scenes where I was most tightly clenching my butthole of any movie we've watched this year, which is where somebody gives birth and then immediately like wants to crush and strangle their child, and they do it. But I was so scared that it was going to happen.
Yeah, there were a few moments where, like, I feel like it started to get towards the line of like, okay, like, this isn't funny anymore. Like, not even darkly. Right. This is just getting kind of gross and dark.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I mean, I think the moment, sorry, the moment that perfectly illustrates that, like the scene where all the dads are standing outside the nursery and just like drooling at the window to like get in there and like strangle their babies, that was darkly funny in a way. But I think the scene in the operating room, or in the birthing room, is that what she called it? the maternity ward. Isn't a birthing room something on a like a naval ship? what do they call that, Neil? You would know. You're a Navy man.
A birthing room with an E. That probably exists.
Okay, I'll look it up and report back. But yeah, go ahead. What were you saying about the scene?
I was just gonna say that movie or that particular scene with dads, like, you know, looking at their newborn sons through the window and like wanting to murder them, made me laugh in particular because they do a close up of a guy, and I was like, man, now I know why Gid wanted us to watch this. He's got a guest appearance in here. I get at about 4 minutes. It was like, you know, it's you know, red hair, glasses. Like, got the beard. Yeah, he's got. I didn't realize that you were an extra in this movie, Gid.
I didn't want to spoil it.
What did you get paid for this, Gid?
You know, nickels. But you know, Nick Cage was in it. I was like, let's do it, man.
Yeah, you just wanted to work with Nick Cage.
Yeah, I requested they pay me, you know, because they were paying me literally 2 nickels, you know, and I had Nick Cage put them on each of his thumbs and flick them at me, and you know, it's pretty much the greatest day of my life, you know.
Yeah, you could say they were nickel-less Cage. That was dumb. Okay, anyway, moving on. Good.
I do like, just to piggyback off of you guys talking about the scene where the dads are looking at all the kids. I agree with you guys what you said before, where it was like, holy shit, like this is almost crossing a line, where like the baby was just born, and she's not just trying to like strangle and maybe crush it, but also like grabs the scalpel, and it's just like, you know, sometimes this movie makes you go like, oh, holy shit, like that was crazy, and it's kind of funny. But then it's like, oh, holy shit, this is like really dark and really fucked up and really scary right now. But with the dads like looking at all the newborns, it's almost like they're like looking at them and they're thinking like, you little shit, like you're going to ruin my life and all my freedom and, and everything. They're like, it's all your fault, you know?
Yeah, it's like a inverse, not as smart version of Eraserhead in that way.
Yeah,
it's like a lot of the same. Like, I don't think that stuff is super good in this movie. Like, I don't think it's good enough to like carry some of the weaker aspects. But you know, you could see that they were going for some sort of like commentary on parents being resentful of the youth of their kids and their kids like, you know, being more attractive than they are, or getting old, and all that sort of thing. It's brought up, and I don't know that they really say that much about it, honestly. But you can tell that like the director was definitely like thinking about that particular problem, and I don't know. Like, I feel like it's sort of like Evel Knievel. I like to give directors a lot of writer directors like credit for the attempt on something. Trying to say something, even if they didn't really get there. So there was all that. So this episode, I asked each of you to kind of come up with a subject to bring up kind of at the 2/3 of the way mark through the podcast. And Neil, I think I was going to throw to you first. Did you have a particular topic surrounding this movie you wanted to bring up?
So two things. The first is just a fun little gaffe, I think. So the sort of the teenage daughter character has a boyfriend who gets his shit rocked throughout the movie, like
severely.
But at one point he's leaving school because he just finished the PSAT, and he unlocks his bike, and my first thought was, He wrapped his bike chain around a pillar that you can easily just lift the bike up over. Like, you have not actually.
That's so funny.
But I did want to say that we kind of talked about with like Color Out of Space, where people like were not necessarily on the same level as Nick Cage, and nobody gets like as demented as he does. I think it's kind of a similar performance at times for him. But late in the movie, he and his wife are like almost like fixing their marriage over the concept of murdering their children, which is And I thought the wife did like a really good job of like matching Nick Cage. Like I'm not familiar with that actress outside of this, but I think she did a really phenomenal job of like matching his energy. As they're almost like falling in love again as they try to gas their children out of the basement.
Yeah.
So we've watched a movie with her as one of the stars before. Neil, do you know what it is?
I don't.
I do.
It is that. I'm forgetting the name of it, but Gideon, you know what it is. Cruel Intentions. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
She is the tutored girl, the girl who is tutored by Sarah Michelle Gellar in Cruel Intentions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, she was, I completely agree with you, Neil. She was, like, the highlight of this movie for me. Like, obviously, Nick Cage had some, like, good scenes and some good moments and things, but I actually felt like, this is sacrilege for me, I know, but, like, I don't want to say he was bad in this movie, but I think he was, I never think, like, Nick Cage is necessarily bad himself. I just think that he's, like, misused. And I felt like he was a little misused and like over the top in moments that didn't really call for being over the top in this movie. And then there were times where he was like over the top and it was awesome. But there was a few times I was like, okay, we need to let's reel it in a little bit here, guys. But I thought Selma Blair was like a huge highlight. I think she's like, she was really, really good.
I think they're a good pair for sure.
Yeah, they. I think they smartly cast two people who were like capable of going apeshit.
Mm.
And yeah, they certainly got that. Let's see, Gideon, did you have a subject that you wanted to bring up?
I have a couple of things. Just a couple of things I was reading on the IMDb trivia page. I wanted to bring up. I thought were interesting. And then I want to talk about the kind of almost like family bonding moments that they flip on their head, and it's like endearing, but then it's got that dark comedy blended into it that I think works pretty well. So I'll start with that, and then I'll go to the trivia. So like one of the things I liked was you know, how the son got the gun. They're like, what's the combination to the case? It was locked. Oh, it's Joshua's birthday. You know, I was like, oh, that's kind of sweet. It's the son's birthday. But then it's like, oh, that's how he got the freaking gun that he shot his mom with. And even just like, you know, just being silly with kids and trying to make them laugh or whatever. But they're like laughing and almost like looking forward to them like choking to death on like the toxic gas fumes from the stove because they like routed it to the basement, and Nicolas Cage is like, Carly, Joshy. You know, I thought that was really funny. Just like, you know, like a dad trying to make his kids laugh, and I just thought that was a really great moment.
And the wife calling him out like, you're being over the top right now. literally calling out Nick Cage for overacting.
And Nick Cage did a cry in this movie where he had his fist up to his mouth and he almost did the vampire's kiss cry. I was like, he was like an atom away from doing it. And I was so happy to see that.
And then two other quick things. I did see like a meme edit on TikTok of like, you know, I've been playing Ark Raiders, and if you down an enemy, they're like crawling around. And then to finish them off, you can go up and like punch them. And I saw like a short clip of this when he like, you know, reaches up towards the ceiling and he makes a fist and then he punches the boyfriend. And like that was the clip they were talking about in relation to like knocking enemy players and Ark Raiders. So I thought that was really funny. I saw that before watching the movie. And then I was kind of shocked when after he has the freak out scene. And he bashes the pool table to smithereens. And he's just, you know, kind of lamenting about, you know, getting older. And now they're just mom and dad and that kind of thing. I thought that was actually, like, surprisingly well done. Maybe one of the better scenes in terms of the writing for the whole movie. So I enjoyed that more than I expected. But then back to the trivia things, I wanted to just briefly go over. So this was, I think it was in 2017, might have released 2018 for some places. But Nicolas Cage said this was like one of his favorite movies he'd done in the past 10 years. So I feel like you can tell
Wow.
he's really enjoying himself in this. And then the writer of All-Star Superman, Grant Morrison, makes a cameo. He's like the expert on the TV, which I thought was just funny. I'm like, oh, he's just in this movie. That's cool. And I guess John Waters said it was his favorite movie, or among his top 10 favorite releases in 2018.
That is wild to me. And also, make a side note, we got to get to John Waters at some point. I mean, I've never seen anything he's done, but obviously he's a huge name.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen him in some
Yes.
movies, but I haven't seen any of his movies personally.
My coworker Patrick keeps, like, every time we're talking about movies, he always brings up that I got to get to John Waters one of these days and tell him about it. So, yeah, I got to get to that at some point. Well, lads, we are in the final 10 minutes of the show. Start wrapping things up here. Any final thoughts? Anything we want to speak now, forever hold our peace.
I think that's it for me.
All right. Well, no, if we don't have anything more to say, I think we can start giving scores and figure out what we want to do. Well, let's see. Yeah, next week. Well, I'm already talking, so I'll go ahead and say I'm going to give it a 3. It wasn't like I love it or I hate it. It was just kind of in the middle for me. I was by the end of it, I wasn't as like disappointed that it wasn't explained more. But certainly in the middle, I was like, I could feel the parasite taking over my brain that was like, I need to understand everything about what's going on here. But certainly that was like that feeling was squashed more by the end of the movie after some crazy hijinks. And I really loved the punchline that when Lance Henriksen and the grandma show up and, shit starts popping off. Like it took its concept and it applied it in ways that were fairly novel, that weren't just like 50-year-olds coming after their 15-year-olds, right? It was more like, oh, let's see how this works with like newborns. Let's see how this works with infants. Let's see how this works with the elderly and their adult children. Let's see how this works in like all these different contexts. And it smartly sets all that stuff up in the be very beginning, that first 30 minutes. So, it has a chance to pay off later. I will say there was at some point a blender shown in like exquisite detail, and that is never really paid off. I thought for sure somebody was going to get blended with that thing, and that never happens. Yes.
I'm with you.
But I mean, you guys saw what I saw, right? Like they she put her like finger down in the blender and it made like that
That
scary movie,
stinger.
like, yeah, that stinger of like, hey, this is sharp, watch out. So yeah, but yeah, as I would say, it was like a, it was a solid 3. It was a good popcorn and Mountain Dew kind of short, easy breezy kind of movie. I don't think I'd like really recommend it for any particular reason. Like there's no reason to watch this over other better movies, but it wasn't like offensive to me. It was just like it was just fine. How about you, Neil?
I have a similar opinion, but because I'm me, that makes it a 2. I don't regret having seen this, and maybe if I'd like known more about it going in, I might have enjoyed it more. But I think I would recommend, most people to watch this just once, just to see how bizarre it is. And there's some legitimately good scenes, and there's stuff to like in here, but at the same time, I'm not really inclined to watch it again anytime soon. It's a weird sort of recommendation from me.
How about you, Gid?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm kind of in a similar boat with Neil. Where, I mean, I don't think it's the greatest in some of the execution. I do think it's fun. It's almost like a light three. It could really go, depending on the day, between a two and a three for me. I think it's fun. I was entertained for most of it. But I don't feel like I would be like revisiting it too often. I feel like you could probably, if you were going to show some of this to somebody, you could probably just show them like highlights of it on YouTube clips, for example, and, you know, save yourself the time. But, you know, overall, I think I will give it a light three. I did have fun. I enjoyed Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair, their performances, the action and the violence. And I thought it was decently well executed on the overall premise. Although, you know, I might have wanted a bit more in certain areas. So I agree with what you guys said about it. It is a hard recommend. I feel like you need to at least be a fan of Nick Cage and his craziness to kind of want to try it out.
He's not even in it for like the first 45 minutes. It's like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, he's in it, but he's just like so sparse for the first half of it.
And that's definitely one of my biggest gripes is I wish he would have been more prominent, especially in the front loading of it. I feel like that would have strengthened this movie a lot, you know, especially just seeing him at work and different things like that. Maybe even seeing more of his youth and stuff. But yeah, you know, it was fun. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but for what it is, I had a fun time. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, does that mean it's Neil's turn to pick next?
It is.
All right. But you said that like a man who already has his movie picked out.
Well, it's down to a coin flip because I was going to pick kind of a nice little fun palate cleanser. But at the same time, seeing as we brought up how this was a John Waters favorite, and I've had Pink Flamingos on my to-do list for the longest time, I'm kind of wondering what to do.
The choice is yours.
You know, I'm going to do the palate cleanser going into December, and then, you know, maybe we can do a
John Waters January.
Yeah, John Waters January or something like that. So my pick is going to be 2007's Stardust.
Stardust. Okay, nice.
Okay. John Waters. Damn it, I was really hoping for James Hong January.
For what?
John Waters January. For what? James Hong is that like... He's been in like hundreds of movies. He's always this like prolific side actor.
It could be a blend, you know. We could have a blended month.
I don't know. It was just a funny idea because like there's every time James Hong is in a movie on this podcast, I'm always like, hey, it's James Hong. Like I'm always just like really excited about it for some reason.
I wanna do 1 month. I feel like we should do like childhood favorites, you know?
Mm.
We got to do Toy Story someday for me, but I have another one. I don't want to spoil yet, but I think it'd be funny.
I think a really good one would be like childhood what the fuck movies, like movies that you feel like you're the only person who remembers this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one,
or like why did I watch this so much as a kid?
Yeah, like not like inappropriate for children kind of movies. I like the one that I'm specifically thinking of. Is there's an animated movie called We're Back, A Dinosaur Story. That I feel like, you know, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Okay, now I do. Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Yes. It is like very specific to guys our age. I feel like nobody except us knows that this movie existed because it was marketed like relentlessly on Cartoon Network or something. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I've seen it. I don't really remember what it was about. Anything like that. It's a stupid name for a movie.
It is.
Just it, and it's just such a bizarre, like, why would you market it that way? I don't know. Yeah, okay, so Stardust for next week. I think that sounds good. I also kind of need a little bit of a bring Nick Cage. As much as I love the man, I'm excited to watch a movie next week that doesn't have him in it. Unless it does have him in it for some reason.
not that I'm aware of, but there are some cases that you will be surprised to see in the way that they are presented.
Okay, interesting. So you've seen it before then?
Yeah, but I'm excited to visit it.
Gideon, have you seen it?
I have, but yeah, I'm down to watch it. I'm down to
read. Okay, I not only have I not seen it, I've never even heard of it, so
I think it's, not to get too deep into it, but it was kind of buried, but it deserves more recognition.
Okay. Well, I'm excited. I'm glad that you didn't pick Pink Flamingos, because I'm going to be at my parents' house this weekend, and that would have been kind of awkward.
Oh, no, then I'm changing my...
Yeah, change it, switch.
Dad, it's for the podcast.
I have to watch this.
This isn't going to be another one of those Pink Flamingo type movies, is it?
That's like my dad insisting he's cool and playing. Like, he's like, no, I'll play Cards Against Humanities with you guys. And then we like sit down, we're playing Cards Against Humanities, and he draws a card and he's like confused. And he's like, what the hell is pixelated boo cake?
Jesus Christ.
So.
All right,
so there we go, guys.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah. See you guys later.
Have a good one, guys.